Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. I hear always the admonishment of my friends. Constrain that show. Constrain it. But who will listen to the listeners? The show does what it wants and begins and ends with them. Question. Good morning, Don. What is it? I've written a radio play and I'd love you to perform it. Well, what is it? It's inspired by Alan Moore's The Watchman. Have you read this?
Is it about Jeff? He likes watches.
No. It's about the downside of superheroes, more or less. My play is a little different, though. It's called The Listeners. Oh, I like that. I know lots of listeners. Who will listen to the listeners? My play is essentially about the power of powerlessness.
But you listening?
You see, in my play... Now, here's the script, so you can see for yourself.
I have some good lines.
Let's see. Nope, not doing it.
Why, Butch?
Too many stupid puns. I didn't want to take myself too seriously. Also, it's a device to expose myself to a bit of ridicule as a way of evening the power dynamic between artist and audience.
You don't want to pretend to be more sophisticated and clever than you really are.
Exactly, Lou. Oh, okay, I'll do it. Oh, I'm so pleased. I can't wait to see how it turns out.
Don Bourgeoisie presents... The Listener.
Pass the salt. Pass the salt.
I'm trying. Be patient.
Pass it now.
It's not something I can control.
What's going on here, you guys? Lou ate the salt shaker.
I'm sorry. I thought it was candy.
How could you think it was candy?
Well, I was reading the paper and eating candies out of a dish without really looking, and I guess I grabbed the salt shaker.
But don't you chew?
You don't chew candy. You swallow it like a pill, right?
No, you chew it or suck on it.
Suck on it? Like a saltine?
What is wrong with you? Do we need to get you to a hospital?
Nah, I've eaten bigger, less appropriate things, and it's not a problem. Either they eventually pass, or, like that pair of sunglasses, they just find a comfortable spot in my gut and take up residence.
So, you have a stomach full of foreign objects?
I will have you know that everything in my belly is American-made. I take that back. That Wedgwood tea set is English.
So in the meantime, what do I put on my eggs?
Montreal steak spice is like salt.
It's got coriander in it.
Oh, I forgot.
Listen, we have bigger problems than salt.
Said the Star Trek salt monster as Captain Kirk was about to kill him, but I forget how.
Listen, Dr. Boulevardier is missing.
The most powerful man in the universe?
Yes.
Rendered that way by a combination of whiskey, vermouth, and Campari?
Yeah, he's like Dr. Negroni, but with whiskey.
He's gone. No trace.
Where would the most powerful man in the universe go without being noticed?
Sometimes you forget it's your week for the timeshare, and you gotta hurry up and get to the Virgin Islands.
I don't think he's there.
I'll tell you what. I will check out all of the Caribbean resorts to see.
He's not there. Even if he were, if he doesn't want to be found, he won't be. Our only hope is Ozzy Bourdais, the smartest man in the world.
Oh, he creeps me out.
He can do Sudoku super fast.
Yeah, he's smart. But does he have common sense?
Oh, yeah, tons.
Yeah, but does he have street smarts?
I'd say so, yes.
Ah, but... Nah, forget him, snob.
He might be dangerous and arrogant and annoying, but if anybody knows where Dr. Boulevardier is, it's him.
Okay. I hate being around someone I can't physically stab if need be.
The year is 1950, in the possible world called Gary. Some call it XO11 or Blue Foul Universe, but it isn't quite the world we are used to. The president is Samuel Shemp Howard. He has just delivered his famous Almoidea speech, in which he reaffirmed his commitment to destroy all of the superheroes who did not belong to the official Heroes Union, roughly half of the population. I must point out that in this world, at this time, every living person is a superhero, except for three people, the last of the non-superheroes, or so-called stages, named because they did not evolve beyond the ordinary human stage. These three stages, Lou, Hardy, and Butchie, are the only ones not involved in what could become a global war between all people.
Dear Mom, sorry I haven't written lately. I've been busy. Had to cut a guy's hand off for hitting his dog. And also I'm redoing the ceiling in the utility room, and the filth that drops from it reminds me of the rat feces and rubbish who perpetrate evil and yet walk these wretched streets with impunity. How's Aunt Dora's cat? I'm still in my cosplay vigilante group, but we haven't been meeting lately. I don't know if it's a lack of enthusiasm, or that people are just busy with their lives, or that someone is targeting us for murder one by one. Regardless, it's crap. Also, Ma, stop sending coupons. I rarely use them, and they aren't really for items I buy. Thank you and all, but you probably could use them more than I. Anyway, gotta go look for Dr. Boulevardier. He's missing. Not that I care, but it could be bad. Okay, Mom, be well, and get to the doctor about that foot. It concerns me. Do not mess around with that. Signed, your son, Myers-Briggs.
Gentlemen, come in. I'm so honored that the last three stages are here in my parlor.
Parlor? Ice cream or beauty?
Ozzybornius? We have come here with a concern that you are probably already aware of.
Or car parlor.
Car parlor? That's not a word.
No, it's two words.
I mean, that's not an expression.
Oh my God, stop.
Yes, I am aware that Dr. Boulevardier is missing.
Are you not concerned?
Why should I be? We live in a world with nothing but superheroes, present company excluded.
None taken.
But he's the most powerful being in the universe.
And
we're in the middle of what could be a global superhero war. He's the only one capable of stopping it.
Unfortunately for all of us, his ability to see all has rendered him paralyzed with depression and ennui. That guy couldn't motivate to move his bowels, if he had any.
I think he has bowels. I just think they're made of pure energy.
So even if there was a war and both sides annihilated each other, he couldn't care less.
I can't believe that. The Don Bourgeoisie I know would care.
He isn't Don anymore. He's Dr. Boulevardier, and he couldn't care less.
Hey, if you're really the smartest man in the world, prove it.
The surgeon is his mother.
I have a riddle. This man and his son are in a car accident, and the man dies and... Dang it!
Listen, he isn't lost. I'm telling you, you're wasting your time.
Then where is he?
He's on the moon.
The moon? Like the club in Tallahassee or the planet?
The moon isn't a planet.
Then what is it?
It's a moon.
We call our moon, moon?
We call our cat, cat.
Well, that's true.
Well, we're going to the moon then.
Good luck.
I've never been to the moon.
No one has yet, except for Dr. B.
Then how do we get there?
I think I know someone with a ship that can take us there.
So the three stages visited one of their old friends, the retired superhero, the Burrow Owl. What is it, Butch?
The Dead Milkman song, Stort. Burrow Owl.
What?
Forget it. Go on, Burrow Owl. He better live in the ground.
Should I start over, Don?
No, we can punch it in later.
Okay, where was I?
Let's see.
The retired superhero, Burrow Owl, who still had his spaceship from his crime-fighting days. So the three stages headed to the moon to convince Dr. Boulevardier to save humanity.
Nice spaceship.
I helped with the interior when he built it. All of this cabinetry is Bermuda cedar.
It's beautiful.
It handles great, too.
What are the engines and fuel? What does it run on?
You don't want to know.
Why?
Well, as you may know from numerous Doctor Who episodes, some spaceships harness the power of a gentle creature's fear to supply a cheap form of energy.
So it runs on longing and sorrow at the expense of some poor creature?
No, I'm kidding. It runs on my pee. I'll be right back. I have to top off the tank.
So, do you think Dr. B will help us, Hardy?
It's hard to say. Oz says Dr. B just doesn't care about anything anymore.
Well, how do we make him care?
That's a good question. Maybe a little bit of Don is still in there.
That was a heck of an accident. He was exposed to a figurative cocktail of powerful interstellar forces.
Actually, he was exposed to a literal cocktail of vermouth. But some people have a strange reaction to alcohol.
So in this case, alcohol made someone invincible yet depressed.
Yeah, unusual, huh?
We there yet?
Yes, here we are.
I'll just open the door then.
Lou, wait! No!
I totally forgot there's no air on the moon.
So, how are we breathing now? Question.
Dr. Boulevardier.
Why are you here?
I think you must know.
I do, but we have to state things out loud because of the listeners.
Dr. B, the world has gone mad. Humanity's dreams have been fulfilled, and every person has whatever powers they ever wanted, and now they're all at each other's throats. We have finally rid the world of the cause of fear and anger, and yet we have more of it than ever.
And you'd like me to,
I don't know, use your powers to bring peace?
Power can't bring peace. Power can't bring anything much, really. I have no fear, no worry, no pain. I am all-powerful, and all it has brought me is a feeling of profound isolation and a deep sense of pointlessness. Why bother?
But people will suffer and die.
They do that anyway.
All people will suffer and die.
If we just wait a little while, then problem solved.
Well, do it for us.
Why would I save the least powerful when I won't even save the most powerful?
Which is more precious, a mountain or a flower?
What?
What's more precious? A flower is fleeting. It is vulnerable. It is doomed. It is beautiful because it is temporary. Permanent flowers we have, plastic or something that won't die, they are not beautiful because they are not temporary. Listen, we are the weakest creatures alive right now. All of our feelings are intense because we are afraid. Afraid of dying, of suffering, of loss and isolation. So our highs are very high, and our lows are very low. And that's our secret weapon. We have to feel to survive. We can't always speak, so we are forced to listen. You have no reason to listen, to pay attention, for you have nothing to fear. We will always see more than you. We will always experience more than you because we are the listeners.
All right. What do you want me to do?
Oh, I know what I want you to do. I want you to come on in my home, friends. Hardy White has a refuge for the lonely, for the weary, for the fearful. Are you sad and tired? Oh, come on in here. Walk in through my open door. It's also on the tour of home, so it's completely appropriate. I know this room is very Dorothy Draper inspired. That's why I have the black and white checkered floor and all the florals. I love color. I also love people, and I understand that the human heart longs for meaning and company and friendship and love, and so I've opened up my home for that. So come on in, look around. You see, like I said, I like florals, I like color, except in my den, where I like brown leather and animal bones. Not animal bones. Well, if the animal comes in there on its own accord and dies and wants to leave its bones there, say, Hardy, I want to die in your den and just leave me there. All right, now that's happened to a couple raccoons and possums. I assume that's what they're saying. But there they are, and it's a reminder, it's a memento mori. Hey, life is fleeting and delicate like these
animal carcasses in my den. Let's not go in the den. I like to visit in the kitchen anyway. Most parties end up there. I had a house that was just a kitchen because of that, because we had so many parties. I said, come on in to my kitchen house, and we'll sit around the table, and we will visit, and nobody knows you came, you know. Nobody knows you're in here. See, I'm afraid that people will know I'm afraid. I'm an adult, and I don't want anyone to know that I'm confused and I may not know what's going on. I get things done. I have friends in very important jobs. I'm not the only. I don't just hang around with other people who aren't important. I have a wide range of friends and people because I love people. And so some of them are very important people, like doctors and judges and all. And I'm telling you, even they get incredibly stressed out. They do their jobs, but sometimes at a very high price of anxiety and self-doubt. And so you are not alone. And this is a wonderful space to come because you don't have to show your face. I'd be too embarrassed to go some sort of hey, we're holding a meeting of people who are absolutely incompetent when it comes to their life. You don't want to show up at that. First of all, you probably wouldn't show up at that. But this, you just have to sit in your home, and we can visit that way. Oh, it's remarkable. Now, we can't do crafts. That makes me sad because I won't be able to physically hand you a pair of scissors. But in our imagination, we can do those things, can't we? Oh, what's going on in your house today? If you want to know what's going on in a house, ask the mouse. That sounds like a children's book, and I didn't intend it to rhyme. But it's true, because the mouse is tiny and vulnerable. The mouse must pay attention constantly. It scurries away in fear. It has to listen and watch constantly and be aware of its surroundings merely to survive. Scurrying around like that. Now, the people in the house, they don't pay that kind of attention. They already feel safe. They don't think something is going to come out of the roof and eat them, and it could happen, you know, but they don't think that. But the mouse, oh, it has to scurry away into a little door in the wainscoting or whatever you call it. I don't know what that's called, the molding. Molding doesn't sound nice. Wainscoting sounds nice. I think that's a British word meaning molding. And the little door in there, little archway door that the mouse goes in and out. And people always put I'm going to put the mousetrap right in front of his door as if he's an idiot. Don't do that. Put it somewhere you can't see it. You know, if you're really going to go to war with the mice, you got to be more clever than that. They're not stupid. Look what they've done to survive. They're smart little creatures. And we know from cartoons that sometimes they're able to construct tiny little vests. And if you see an animal in a little vest, don't mock them. No, old vest. That's the very 70s. Say, hey, that's a swell vest. Did you make that yourself? And you can strike up a bit of a conversation about it. I did that way. Say, did you knit that sweater? That looks homemade. And they go, no, it was very expensive. Oh, sorry. Also, are you pregnant? No, I'm an 80-year-old man. All right. Well, I don't know. So I like to look at people. And the reason I like to look at people is because, you know, I want to know what they're doing to cope with this life. I want to know if I'm all alone in my fears and doubts, right? So that's why we like to go to parks and spy on people or put secret cameras in their houses and look at them, spy on them, see what they're doing. I'm only half kidding because we do like to do that. That's part of our voyeur culture, is to watch. Because we don't know what others are doing, and we think, maybe I'm all alone. Maybe I'm a misfit. Oh, we all think we're misfits. You're wrong. Also, you're wrong if you think you fit in. Then you're wrong there, too. Oh, there's something else going on, isn't there? There's something else going on, and I think that's just a general lack of knowledge of what's going on. Yes, ignorance. Now, there's ignorance and there's ignorance. There's ignorance that you know about, and there's ignorance that you don't know about. So it's best to think yourself ignorant, because if you think yourself smart and you're actually ignorant, you're going to have a problem. But if you think you're ignorant, there's a 99% chance that is an accurate thought. So I just go around thinking, well, maybe I don't know everything. And the older I get, I actually find out there are quite a few things I do not know. But then there's a lot of things I do know. Watching Rockford Files the other day, season 3, episode 1, Sharon Gless. I'm excited. Sharon Gless is in it. Young person says, who is Sharon Gless? And I said, Lacey. Cagney and Lacey. I said, I don't know what you're saying. I said, she's not Tyne Daly. I said, I don't know what you're saying. I said, oh, look how much knowledge I have. I didn't realize I had accrued all that knowledge over time. And I was watching that and I was saying, that's Stuart Margolin. And the young person said, all right, look how much I know. Now, some people might say, oh, that knowledge seems to be pointless, doesn't it? What knowledge isn't? Well, knowledge of how to grow food and all. All right. That's a very good point. You're right. All right, I'll admit when I'm wrong. I'm not mostly wrong. I don't even know the percentage. I don't keep track. I'm sure someone does. Maybe there's people betting on. Let's bet on how often Hardy is just really completely wrong and how often he is right, and then how often he is accidentally right. And that happens too. You can be right for the wrong reasons. You can be morally correct for the wrong reasons. And I have told this story before. In the 19th century in Western Pennsylvania, there was an oil rush. There was, it wasn't proper oil. It was what they call coal oil. And it was oil that kind of seeped up. So the indigenous people knew about this. First Nation people knew about this and said, yes, this is the land of oily scum, or I don't know what they called it. But white people discovered it, and they said, what is all this up from the ground come a bubbling crude? Can it be used and converted into regular oil, heating oil? So they sent some scientists or something out there to test it, and they go, yeah, it's not great, but it's so plentiful that we could take this crude stuff and it can be used for oil. So they started pumping oil out of the grounds and set up a lot of oil wells in Western Pennsylvania. You hear me? Venango County. And then when they did, there was some religious people got very angry and said, you are doing a horrible thing. You say, oh my gosh, yes, some environmentalists. These religious people said, you are pumping this oil out of the ground that God has put into the ground so that he may burn the earth at the end times. So you are taking away God's fuel that he is going to use to burn up the earth and destroy all you sinners. Oh, so in a way, they were right, because gosh, you are making the environment terrible. They were tearing down trees, putting up oil wells. But gosh, I don't think that's the reason. So sometimes you can be right for the wrong reason, or you can be wrong for the right reason, or you can be wrong for the wrong reason, or right for the right reason. Something like that. All permutations. Isn't that interesting? I don't know. It is interesting. Just nod your head and say, yes, sometimes we must not lie, but sometimes there's no reason to hurt a person. You know, if you were, and you know this with a child's telling you something might be silly or wrong, you don't go and correct them every single thing, right? Because you realize it's a child, and you don't want to discourage it from being curious or for telling stories and saying, no, child, you're wrong, you got that detail wrong. Child's going to shut up, because it's power that allows us to speak. It's confidence. When we're confident and we feel like we have power, we speak. And when we are afraid, we do not speak, and we shut our mouths. And you can see those who feel powerless do not open their mouths. And they stand there, but they still listen, and they still hear. Children do this sometimes. They will listen. Be careful what you say. The children are listening. And now they're spouting the F word like crazy, aren't they? Hey, they were listening. I used to crawl into a cabinet and record my family on a tape recorder that I got. And I remember one time I did it. I called in. I found this tape years later. And I'm saying, hey, I'm recording the adults. And I recorded the adults, and the adults' conversation degenerated into a horrible argument. And it just broke my heart listening back to it, because I thought, oh no, little child me is hearing these people who I thought knew it all get mad at each other,
challenge each other and act like children. And I didn't know what to think then. If people that I thought knew what was going on, the people who were teaching me about the world, teaching me how to be a grown-up, teaching me what to think and do, if they didn't know what to do, what's going on? And a lot of children discover this, say, oh, I don't think my parents know what they're talking about. Sometimes they do, but often I think they don't. They're making mistakes I do. And we see that and say, oh, what, children sometimes are so wise, aren't they? No, I think sometimes they're just repeating back lessons that we have taught them, but that we don't listen to ourselves. And so we hear our better selves coming back from the children saying, you should not tease people, or you should not steal from people. And we say, oh, yes, that's a nice rule, but... And this goes on all the time. Oh, are you still fearful? It's probably all these scary skeletons I have hanging around the house. I'm sorry. You know, I have this interesting relationship with death and impermanence. I am not completely uncomfortable with it. I like to face it. I don't want to turn my eyes away from the things that are difficult. All around us, we see it. If we forget that we are impermanent, then we're going to start strutting around like we're superheroes. But then if we think about it too much and realize how weak we are, we're never going to assert ourselves because we're going to be completely fearful. How do we do it, Hardy? I know this. Together. Together is how we do it. You run into that problem when you do it alone, but when you do it together, when you're down, somebody might be up. That's the thing. The more of us there are, the more people can lift you up. If you're alone, you depend on your own moods and your own ignorance is going to drag you down. But when you're with somebody, oh my goodness, they can lend you a hand. That's so when people are going up a mountain, they tie themselves together with ropes. That way one of them falls down a crevasse, then they all go plummeting. No, ideally, what happens is that they're able to pull you back up again because you're linked to them. And that's why I want to link my heart to you. I want to tether myself to you so that if I fall down into a crevasse as we are hiking the Himalayas, that you can pull me back up and I will not suffer the fate of green boots and lay there alone, frozen on the mountainside for all eternity. Those things fascinate me, though, mummies and bodies. And those were human beings. And they're not anymore, not really. It's just a body. What was in it? If you've ever seen somebody pass away, I mean, go from being alive one moment, hopefully not in a violent way, but a lot of times we're able to be with somebody as they pass on if they've been sick or they're old, and sometimes you're able to be there at the moment that they leave us. And that is what it's like. So you were there, and then you were not. And where are you now? And where were you ever? I don't know. It's a little bit scary, isn't it? And I've been in this situation, but I haven't been alone in it. I've been in it with my hands joined to others around the bed of a dying person. And those hands joined together are exactly like that rope that links those hikers on the mountain. We are together, so we are stronger. And yes, it is frightening, but if we do it linked, with our hands linked, and can we do it over the radio? Oh, I think even more so. Even more so. Because if you were to take my hand in real life, you would say, this hand is unnaturally clammy and smells of onion. And now my hand smells like onion. And I would say, I hate to correct you, but it's garlic. And I think it smells vaguely good. Also, there might be something under my fingernails. Cumin. I don't know how it got there, but it's not unpleasant, but it's interesting that my hand smells like food, but you don't want to touch that. This way, you don't have to. You can just touch my thoughts and grab my thoughts, and we can be linked together that way. Because in this sense, I'm using sound as a tether, and we do that all the time, too, with music.
Oh, music soothes the savage breast. My breast is feeling savage.
That happened to me one time. My left pectoral became savage and started fighting and biting at my right nipple. And it became ugly. So what's your chest doing?
I don't know. It's bobbing up and down, isn't it?
Yes, because my pectorals are fighting one another. How is that? That's because the human breast contradicts itself often. We're just two different people inside often. And a lot of times those two different souls, their goals will coincide, and sometimes their goals will collide. And that's when you think, why did I do that? Why did I yell at that person in traffic? Why did I lose my cool? I don't want to. Why did I do it? That's because those are two different eyes, I think. But I don't know. What do I know? Sometimes people say that sarcastic-like, like, but what do I know? Because they think they do. When I say it, I literally mean, but what do I know? Because I proved over and over again, I don't know much. I don't know much. But I know when I've gotten it right. I know when I've gotten it right. Because whenever I have let my guard down, and whenever I've told another person, hey, I think I have the same fears as you. I think I'm confused. I don't know what I'm doing. I got to confess to you. Their eyes light up. And they say, thank you. You have given them a gift. You have given them a gift of, what's the opposite of loneliness? Unloneliness, at least. To know that you're not alone. You're not the only one who thinks about these things. And that's what we need. That's why we need art and literature and things. To be able to look into that and say, hey, I'm not the only one. Even in the Bible, you'll see, read that Bible. It's got so many awful things. People do awful things. Yeah, isn't that interesting, though? But it's in there. Why would you include that in the story of your people? Unless you thought that the mistakes were as important as the successes. Otherwise, you would have just a book of successes and then all these news articles and say, you know what Abraham really did? You know he sold his wife once. But it's in there. No one's denying it. No one's denying that the same people that can be heroic can be villainous. That the same people who can be angelic can be devilish. And you have to understand that. Or else you're not going to understand the things in yourself that are driving you.
Who's driving me? I don't know, a tiny little Mario Andretti.
Who's that?
He's from the past. I'm from the 70s.
I sort of am. I don't know why. I think that the things that stick with you the longest are when the world's the freshest. And when I was young and things were fresh and new, that's why I thought everything was like that. I thought everything was like, so to me, the things that I learned first seem the way things are supposed to be. So when I see a sports coat, I think, gosh, why aren't those lapels wider? Those lapels are supposed to, that tie is not wide enough. That's because when I started to notice things, that's what they were like. That sport coat is not checkered. Therefore, I don't know why that person's wearing that. Do you understand? Why are cars so short? They should be super long. The trunk should be as long as the hood. 6 feet in either direction. And why are there not little tiny lights? There's no brome edition of any car, is there? Why doesn't it look like an old Victorian carriage? I don't get it. But I understand that things change constantly. And I'm a certain age and I'm eventually going to go away, and new people are going to come, and they're going to be confused, and that's the only constant, isn't it? Confusion. Walk with me now.
Wow, are you scaring me, Hardy?
I'm just kidding. This house of mine, what is it? It's a fun house. It's a haunted house. It's an open house. It's any house you want it to be. It's all full of all sorts of things. It's full of scary clowns and happy clowns. It's full of skeletons, and it's also filled with flowers. So it's just life. It reflects life and all the contradictions and weirdness of it. Who are you, Hardy? I don't know. I would tell you if I knew, though. I sure would. I just want to be your friend, I think. I want you to accept me. I don't want to be cast out and alone. Oh, my gosh, I want to be part of something. Even if I'm the mascot, I still want to be part of the team. Please let me on the team, even if I have to wear a heavy woolen head and you won't even see my real face. I still want to be part of things. I still want to be accepted. Take me with you. Do not leave me in the court. I want to be on that team bus with you. That's what I ask. And we're going to have all sorts of abilities, aren't we? All of us are not going to be able to do everything well. Some of us might not be able to do anything well. I don't care. Come on, hug me. It's like I'm going to love you less. I'm going to love you less because you can't draw a circle or a straight line. Who cares? In fact, I love the way you draw a line. I think I love the way you draw a picture. I think it's just fine. I'm not lying when I say I like children's art. We all do. And yet it doesn't seem very accomplished, does it? Because sometimes there's just an inherent beauty in things, especially if people have a certain confidence or love of it when they're doing it. You know, if they don't like it, then clearly I probably won't like it too. But if they put their heart and soul in it, it doesn't matter the degree of ability they have. There's something else. And that's why art can excite me, whether it's done by a child or done by Alice Neal. Right? So that's amazing to me. I can see, I've been taught to see beauty. And I think that's a beautiful lesson. Thank you. Thank you, whoever taught me to slow down, to shut my mouth, and to listen, and to open my eyes, and to watch, and to listen. And then I might see incredible things that others don't see. And that my fear and all that might actually help me to see more beauty. Because I have to pay attention. Like a tiny mouse. Mouse is going to see everything. It's small, but you're missing a whole world on the tiny level, aren't you? If you could shrink down, oh, the adventures you would have in your large pile carpeting. We've seen that. There's shows, the Shrinky Dinky Man and Little Shrinky Dinky Lady and everything. They've had these horror movies in the 50s. People thought in the beginning of the nuclear age, people had this idea that, oh, this nuclear radiation was going to be released and people were going to be made into giants, or people going to be made into tiny people, or people going to be made into Spider-Man or anything, or people going to be made into the Incredible Hulk or some radiation. And from the 50s on, or for the 40s on, when we discovered radiation, it changed everything. That fear inspired our imaginations. We better pay attention to it. What can this do? And we started seeing things, even things that weren't there. Maybe it's going to shrink us. Maybe it's going to make us into something awful. It'll make us into monsters. Guess what? The fact that you made a nuclear bomb means you already were a monster. So I used to think that too. I used to think maybe there was some kind of cloud that was going to shrink me down. And then I would have to live in a dollhouse and the cat would be a menace. But then I realized that there was an entire universe kind of folded into this universe. So if I shrunk down, there would be even a more vast universe of unknown things to explore. Suddenly, like I said, blades of grass or trees, and everything shifts, and there's different things to think about. If I was very large, it would be that way too. If I was very large, I might bump my heads on planets. I might burn my fingers on stars. If I were very large, I would have to learn how to navigate that world, wouldn't I? To fly through space and not get my toe stuck in a black hole like it was a bathtub drain. Oh, my toe's in a black hole. It's going to get sucked in there with Ernest Borgnine. Ernest Borgnine is in every black hole, and we know that now, and it's very scary. Don't go in there. I am, of course, referencing, I think it's a Disney movie called The Black Hole, which as a teenager I walked out of because I felt it was not scientifically accurate, and it was bugging me. It's like people cannot go into that black hole. They would be, you know, instantly annihilated. So I was very upset with that. I was
going, that is not true.
And then I just started walking out of all movies, cartoons and everything. That's not true. And then I learned to chill out a little bit and think, well, let's just pretend it's true. Let's see what happens. See what we find out. I'm not going to go around actually flying into a black hole, but let's just pretend for a minute you could go into one. And then I discovered the thought experiment. I love it. The thought experiment. Free your mind. Do experiments with your thoughts. You don't have to do everything literally. You can just think some things. Oh, but we oppress ourselves. Don't let us think some things. Don't let some thoughts into our head. Because we're still convinced that somebody's in there monitoring it. And I've always said this, and I want you to believe, and I don't know if this is dangerous for my fellow human beings, but I want you to think whatever you want. I really do. I think when you oppress yourself like that, and you don't let yourself explore possibilities, even within your own head, that you suppress your own imagination because you think maybe something is, sinful or inappropriate, or you've been told that if you think that way, you can't belong. I'm telling you, a lot of times people will never find out what you're thinking. I think some things and I get angry with people, and a lot of people, the next step is I'm now going to tweet an angry tweet at them. And what I find out is I think that thing, but then if I don't actually tweet the tweet, they may never know I thought that thing. And then I get through that thought and I go, you know, that was kind of a dumb thought. I'm glad I didn't act on it. And so I'm telling you, thoughts can be a wonderful place, like the Star Trek holodeck. That's all it is. So I wish there's a place like a Star Trek holodeck. You fool! It's in your skull. You got one already. You can teach yourself how to be more... how to make it more vivid, how to make your thoughts more vivid, how to concentrate more and to see things in your mind. So are you talking about lucid dreaming? No, I'm just talking about imagining things. You can imagine things in great detail. Your mind is amazing. Now, it doesn't always do what you want. I'll tell you, when you come to this house, if you have fear, I think I can do something about it. If you come to this house and you have confusion, I might be able to do something about it. You come to this house and you have loneliness, I think I can do something about it. You come to this house and you have physical pain, not so sure. I'm not so sure. I can be with you, though. I can try to help you, but I can't solve it. Mental pain, not so sure either. I don't know, but I'll be with you. I know that. We can try together, because some things are not easily fixed. But boy, I tell you, they're better when you share it, when you're not alone. Sometimes it's wonderful to be alone. Other times, it is not. I'm not alone now. I'm with my friends out there. I've never had so many friends as when I put away all my pride. I put away my pride and I put away my, I guess it's all, it is pride, been wanting to be thought clever or funny or something. And I found out that I was saying less and less and doing less and less because I didn't want to make any mistakes. I didn't want to reveal my incompetence. But I tell you, you speak for an hour every week and your flaws will flow and people will see everything. The good, the bad, the ugly, the stupid, the things, oh my gosh. How does he not know how to pronounce that word? How does he not know the definition of that word? Why did he say that? I had to go back. I got confused between that expression, couldn't care less and could care less. You know, I had to go back and fix it because I was like, oh, well, I think it's, I couldn't care less, right? And then some people fussy about things and they immediately think me foolish. Well, I already know I'm foolish. That's why I'm telling you I did something foolish. I can't hide it. I don't want to hide it. It's too difficult. It's too difficult to pretend I'm somebody I'm not. And the older you get, it can be more liberating. You say, oh, this is great. I don't have to pretend that under this shirt is a six-pack ab. You know it's not. I know it's not. You can see it's not. And I don't feel like it has to be. I can still love you, you know, in my misshapen way. Oh, my gosh. I'm a person, too. I know what it involves. Don't pretend you don't poop. Don't pretend it. I know you do. Don't pretend you don't vomit. I know you do. I see this out there. People still dress in these fine clothes as if they don't there aren't pee stains in their silk underwear. I know you're an animal. We all are. I know you're fragile. We all are. People go around calling each other fragile. That cracks me up. Of course you're fragile. My gosh. You're fragile. You know, a cell growing out of control in your body is going to kill you. That's how fragile you are. What do you think, you're made of iron? No, you're not. You're made of meat. You're made of weird living meat kind of thing. And it's not permanent. It wasn't meant to be permanent. It's going to fade away. Oh, you're scaring me, Hardy. No, because I'm about to tell you how to access eternity. We're doing it right now. Eternity's in every moment. We can stretch them out. This whole thing is just experience. Your memories are vague. Your memories are like mist. And you know what else is like mist? The future. The future are just like memories in a way. You know, I imagine what will happen. And it's just as kind of, just as vague and smoky as your memories. The only thing that's really, you can be sure of is right now. Right now. You're listening to Hardy on the radio. And that's being alive. Not what happened yesterday or tomorrow. We can't be sure. All we can be sure about is this moment right now. And we can take these moments. Oh, we can make them. We can understand that they are precious. And start stopping frittering them away. Some I like to fritter away. You got to fritter some away. Can't take everything so serious. Pressure, pressure. There's pressure. Enjoy yourself right now. Nope. Nope. I'm just going to be lazy. I don't want that pressure trying to think everything is so precious. That's the other thing about precious things. You got to sort of forget they're precious sometimes and able to enjoy them. Otherwise, you get upset. Try to preserve stuff. You know? There's this, that story about that. Isn't there some story about, I don't know, someone to preserve something, end up killing it? You know? So I love my lover so much that I'm gonna encase him in Lucite. What is that? Lucite. Lucite's nice. Getting less. You know what's a nice thing? It's a nice Lucite toilet paper holder. This was big in the 80s. Or a Lucite tissue cover. It's very expensive. Lucite towel bar. Very expensive. I went to a temple one time, had a Lucite lectern on the bima. Lucite. Put the Torah right on there. On a Lucite lectern. It was gorgeous. Very expensive, though. You say, it's just clear plastic. Yeah, but it's got to be flawless. It's very difficult, I think, to make. It's not just regular clear plastic. Oh, no, no, no. It's special. Lucite. So do you have stock in it? No, it's just a memory. Like I said, things that I experienced young, I think, are important. More important than things now, but that's not true necessarily. And that's the key to nostalgia, too. Oh, back then, it was all ahead of me. Back then when I watched things, I thought, I could be in a movie someday. I could be an astronaut someday. Someday I could be in a band up on that stage like that. That's what I thought when I was young. I might be in a Rockford Files episode. But now I know none of those things can happen. All those doors have shut now, and so no wonder I long for the past. But now I realize I have something that's even better, and that's a full appreciation of the present. And I don't have to make as many plans as I used to, because now I'm in this beautiful present, and I'm looking around, I'm saying, I never knew there were so many things. I've been looking ahead. Some people look only ahead. Some people look only behind them, and some people look around, and I'm a look-arounder. I'm going to look around me. I know I'm going to be moving into the future, whether I want to or not, and so I'm going to look around. That's how I do everything. See, if I was a detective, I would be like Agent Cooper or Dirk Gently, and say, what do you mean? I say, just wandering around. Looks like they're not even investigating. because what they're doing is walking around observing and sort of waiting for things to reveal themselves. They realize that over time they're going to drift into situations, and that they, if they have an idea, if they think they know, they're going to close their eyes to a lot of possibilities. If you think you don't know, you're going to notice more. Because you're going to say, I need more clues, so I'm going to assume that everything is a clue, and I'm just going to trust my instincts and float through there, and eventually I might get to the solution. That's how I do it. It seems confusing. It seems random. It seems like Hardy White has no goal. He's just rambling. No, I've heard him. It's not just rambling. Oh, I think it is. I think he's just saying things, and it doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't have any point. That may be. But I bet at the end of the show, something sticks with you, and you'll be very surprised. That's what I hope. That's what I hope. And I think that if I give you the gift of my, and I don't want to say imperfect, because I don't think there's anything that's perfect. If I give you the gift of my own mixture of self-doubt and self-love, my own contradictions, that you're going to say, I feel less alone. Yeah, I know that other people are probably going through what I am. And more importantly, somebody out there understands what I'm feeling. And that can be very important. I do understand what you're feeling. Man, I know what it is to have your brain do things that you don't want it to do, to have you behave in ways that you wish you hadn't, behave in ways to people that you love that you wish you hadn't done, and the regret that you feel, oh, that's so human, I know I've done it too. That's why I'm constantly, constantly in a state of thankfulness and asking for forgiveness. Because I know that I am doing all these things and have done these things. And I'm so grateful for second chances. I'm so grateful for forgiveness. I am so grateful for that. Because I don't know what's wrong. Can't always control what I do. Sometimes it just pops out. I'm so sorry. The fear wins often. The anger wins often. You know? I'm not Mr. Rogers. Gosh, who is? And I'm telling you one thing, I love the man, but he's for children. It's children that need to hear you're safe. You're all right. But let me tell you, adults, you're old enough now, I can tell you. You aren't safe. You aren't safe at all, and nobody might be taking care of you. You got to find some other way to understand. You have to find some other strength. You have to go to the next level. And that's difficult often. You know, it's not easy. You have to deal with things other than just getting childish anger. You have to deal with adult anger, which can lead to things like violence and murder. And you must confront those. It's not enough to look for helpers during a Holocaust. Well, I'm not putting these things down. I'm saying it's important lessons for children. But I'm saying, we're not all children anymore. And I don't know that anybody's teaching us how to be adults. And so we're looking to our childhood to find people to teach us how to be children. Maybe I could start all over again. Being an adult is messy. You never really truly grow up. You just keep growing and aging. And your brain gets more things in it. But I'm telling you, it loses a lot of things, too. It gets, memories start to fade. You don't always remember. You don't always learn as quickly, too. So sometimes it's even worse than being a little child, isn't it? But it can be beautiful. It can be beautiful. And I'm telling you, it can't be if we're hurting one another. There's enough in this world to hurt us. There's enough volcanoes and bacteria, you know? We don't have to add to it the pain that we inflict on one another. And we don't have to add the pain that we inflict on ourselves. There are plenty of people out there willing to hurt you. Don't be one. Don't be one. Be against them. Before yourself. Before you.
You're teaching people to be selfish?
Nah, selfish people don't listen to my show. I'm teaching people who aren't selfish enough. I'm teaching people whose hearts are broken. I'm talking to the brokenhearted. And I know there's some people listening in who aren't broken. I wonder what the brokenhearted are doing.
You're finding out now because they're all at Hardy's house and they're having a party and they just had a play. Do you like to put on plays?
My friends just put on a play. Don wrote a play. And even though Don is a human spirit trapped in a house, he still has a desire to do things and perform and do art. And he's still doing it. And we're still helping him doing it. You say, I want to put on plays someday. Maybe I will be on Broadway and winning Tony Awards. Well, that's great. Maybe someday, but maybe now you're old and that's not going to happen. You still want to put on plays? Put on a dang play. Come on, come over to my house. It does not matter how many people show up. Let's do it. Let's just do these things that we want to do. They don't have to be done on a large scale. We don't have to be famous to do it. Come on and play music. Everybody knows that porch music is better than arena music anyway. Don't you want to be right up sitting next to the musician drinking a knee-high rather than, you know, a mile away? No. Come on. I want to be in it with you. The scale doesn't matter to me. Just doing the things is beautiful. I'm going to make my little painting. I know I can't paint. I don't have to show it to anybody. I don't want it. I'm not going to put it in a contest. And I bet somebody finds it beautiful. I see that all the time. People post their art on social media and everything. I'll look at some and I'll go, oh, okay. But then some friends will go, oh, that is incredible. And they're really feeling that. And that's awesome to me. Just because I don't see it doesn't mean the beauty's not there. Do you understand? And there it's enhanced by them knowing the person. Because that's half the art. Is the beauty of the soul. Oh, I'm just reaching out. What are you doing? It's Franz. I must shout out to the universe. That's what I do when a microphone is in front of my face. I just imagine myself speaking to every human being. Not to be known so they'll know who Hardy White is. I don't care. I just want them to hear a human being. I want them to pass through. I want you to be driving through New York City and hear this show for just a little bit in the middle. Say, what was that? It's faded away now. I'll never know what it was. I'll never hear it again. I'll never know who that person was, but something got in my head. And what a beautiful moment that was. And now I will drive on and I will realize that those moments are probably everywhere. I'm just not noticing. I'm going to start listening more. I'm going to start worrying less about where these things are coming from. And start noticing the beauty all around me. And start reaching out and noticing the humanity in the others. Start looking at people for real and understanding. I don't always have words. I'm sorry. The words aren't always there. My words are limited. I wonder how many words I know. I was taking some kind of, had an app that was teaching me German. It was like, you now know 640 German words. And I thought, that's incredible. I can basically ask for apple juice or something. But that's about it. 600 words for me to say, no, I don't want any apple juice. I don't even remember how to say apple juice now that I'm thinking about it. Can you imagine how many words it takes me to say very little here on the radio? It's kind of overwhelming. But I'm saying something, maybe. Maybe something's getting through. I think it is. I hope it is. I hope you feel better. Did you have a good time at my house? Did you like to play? You're a listener, aren't you? You're sitting there, maybe you're yelling at the radio, but right now you're just forced to listen. Nothing's required of you, except for the commenters who are going, oh, I like the mention of Jeff earlier on. And watches. Yeah, I know. That's a little dude there. Probably say somebody typed that. Oh, thank you for joining me, friends. I am so blessed. And I'll tell you what, if you still are listening, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York.
and Rockland County, New York, and online at WFMU.org. That is worldwide. Can you believe it even? Oh, and I am so blessed to call you friend, and that this is a miracle that we can be together for this moment. I recognize that. Oh, I hope you have more of those surprises and miracles this week. And God willing, I'll see you again next week.